It was September 16th, 1959. Summer was over. Classes were starting again at the University of Maine. The newly waxed hallways were scuffed up. The bookstore was crowded. Notebooks were bought and filled with scrawlings and doodlings. Prelims were coming, and so was football. Maverick, the campus mayor, ranged over the gridiron with horse and 10-gallon hat, keeping spirits high as the Black Bears fought through a tough schedule. Losing a few heartbreakers and coming out, well, here, let's have Pete Berry tell you about it. This is
the voice of Maverick bringing you a rundown on our football season for this year. The season this year was not too successful. However, we managed to come out even with 3 wins and three losses, plus a couple of ties. We had some pretty good boys playing for Maine this year, led by Dave Cloutier, only a sophomore, who will be back with us in our effort to improve our record. I think perhaps the best game of the year from school spirit standpoint and from a team performance standpoint was a near victory with our arch rival Connecticut. The game came out 15 for Maine and 18 for Connecticut. However, this is no indication of the fine spirit and the rough, rugged play of the day, as it could have been a victory for either team. We hope that next year, with many returning veterans and a new mayor, that we will again have a successful year.
Away games meant Dale Whitney and the Maine Bears were holding forth in the Bears Den. Meanwhile, President Eliot was carrying forth the battle of realization. Realization to the people of Maine what their university means to them, and its plans for growing and improving. At the October 10th state referendum, his efforts were rewarded as he was heartily backed by the voters. Work ceased and alumni returned. It was homecoming weekend with a big dance. Maureen Henry was crowned queen, and a soggy football game with Colby ensued. Returning from turkey feasting, we retreated to the pajama game, the Maine Masks' second production of the year. But all was not fun. With a snowy backdrop, December was upon us, and the library in the Bear's Den bulged as usual with students, and even culture didn't pass us by. Lecture halls were filled, and concerts applauded, and the union throbbed with club activity. Christmas was coming. We were given plenty of advance notice this year. But slowly and surely, the Maine basketball team had in the meantime started a string of victories It ran out to an amazing 14 in a row before the first setback, bringing national recognition to Brian McCall's Chargers. Number 13 was the sweetest of all, though. On February 6th, University of Connecticut, tall and cocksure, was vanquished in a game that added many a gray hair to a fair head. Here's Bill Lawler, campus radio announcer, broadcasting the decisive play.
Connecticut Huskies hold a slim lead, 1 point, 74-73, with just over a minute to go in the ball game. According to one scoreboard card, we have just about a minute. Carlson's shot is up and no good. Rebound taken off by Larry Shiner. Works his rebound court of Don Pearson. The crowd is really getting wild now. Don Pearson works on a neat pass off, but he was fouled by Griffin. Don Pearson drove on a knee, and he was fouled by one of the Connecticut Huskies' biggest boys, Griffin, and he'll have a one-on-one foul situation. 73-74, Connecticut Huskies out ahead by one.
Sturgeon made the foul shots, and the rest is history. But just part of the great season that rewrote the record. 19 wins, 4 losses. And they're all saying, wait till next year. Maine's glory wasn't confined to the basketball court. Charlie Akers, outstanding member of an equally outstanding Maine ski team, went to Squaw Valley, California to the Winter Olympics, and competed with the best in the world. And back at Orono, with lots of that same pottery stuff, Winter Carnival was a weekend to remember. President Elliott was caught, snowball in hand, by our roving reporter.
That's right, and the snow is the kind that I'm sure the people who have to sculpture in it appreciate it. This is heavy and wet and just right for everything except driving in it.
Have you seen some of the displays for the different
fraternities? Yes, I have. I've been around to see some of them, and they look very nice. I think that snow yesterday worked out perfectly for that part of it.
I know that many of the fraternities and some of the doms were up very late last night working on those, and they really look terrific, I think.
Yes, very good.
Well, thank you very much, President Elliott, for talking with us this morning.
Thank you, Ken.
And even Dean Stewart was in on the fun.
Well, I think this is good fun.
It's kind of cold out here, isn't it?
Kind of cold, but this is good, and I'd rather have them snowball in here than all those things done in carpet.
I noticed a few minutes ago you were throwing some snowballs.
just to see how my aim was.
Oh, I see. You were doing a very excellent job, I might say.
Not at windows.
Not at windows, not breaking screens.
That same afternoon, Dizzy Gillespie's wit and soaring trumpet entertained a packed gym. An extra treat was singer Frankie Lyman. March was coming on in lion fashion, and the backdrops at the Little Theater were being repainted for a first run by the Maine Mask.
This play entitled Another Springtime was produced and directed by Herschel Bricker and presented by members of the Maine Mask Theater. The actors who appeared in this particular scene are Jack Arsenault in the role of Alberto and Michael Dolly in the role of Raoul. This is Donald Billet speaking.
Why did you ask Marta to come back? Is the news too good to keep? One might think you were going to enjoy telling her.
You stupid fool.
What's eating you to make you act this way? Is it because Father thinks you're disloyal to him? You think if you tell the others Father is crazy that no one would believe him anymore?
Marta's our sister and she must know.
But are you convinced? Is Father insane?
You heard what Xavier said.
It's because of what Xavier did not say that I object.
Don't you realize that the doctor was trying to spare us? You have eyes. You're aware of Father's illness.
I know what you say and what Xavier says and nothing more. That isn't enough.
I've had enough of your insults.
Why do you think I'm insulting you? Your conscience isn't very clear, is it?
Xavier is right. You are upset. Listen to me, Alberto. You've got to help me. Our real problem is going to be Mother.
Through another median, the median of the printed page of the campus, political activity suddenly blossomed out, aided by faculty prodding. The need to express one's feelings divested itself in other forms, too. In a bag of masks, a student poetry magazine, a student art show, and even in 1,000 hastily written prelims, student thought was made known. Winter finally gave way to spring, but not without watery protest. Thoughts wandered in 1 o'clock classrooms, and eyes wandered a little more than usual in library study halls. Main day provided a refreshing break from the books, and a full schedule of events kept things hopping throughout the day. Then, another week, and dreaded finals. And it was all over for another year, except for graduation. In the wake of a great year, there was left a lighter full of memories. A lighter. Scratch the flint, and you're on the steps of a woman's dorm. Under a blinking light, trying to say goodnight. Scratch the flint and you're on Sunday morning pickup crew at the house after the big Saturday night party. Scratch the flint and you're floating out of a classroom with an A prelim in your hand. Or dancing at a prom with your necktie a little too tight and your feet slipping on the sawdust. No, it wasn't all pleasant and happy, but it was all part of a year at a university. The university where scores of typewriters' keys were punched, countless red pencils used up, an ocean of coffee consumed, and a mountain of cigarettes smoked, all in the pursuit of education. Our university. The University of Maine. This was the year 1959-1960, the year we were juniors, and we all made the dean's list.